everyone, and welcome to the Conspiracy Hour. We're only a few days away from the 11th anniversary of 9/11. So we thought we'd do some dedication on this show to the people who not only lost their lives and injured and lost much of their livelihood, but also to the people who know that perhaps we're not getting the truth. And I've been studying this issue, the 9/11 truth movement, for 11 years. And I'm here to tell you that I think people who scoff at it and think that it's a conspiracy by wild-eyed conspirators have it right. No, not the way you think. The wild-eyed conspirators were the public relations people handing out the handouts to the journalists, explaining about the Arabs who hijacked the airplanes. It didn't happen that way. Just as the Iraqi war was fought over WMDs, remember that? Well, there's no major weapons of mass destruction. Frankly, we've been fighting a war under false pretenses. Why? Because 9/11 made it possible for lots of people to make lots of money. In this series, over the months, we're going to lay out why some of those people did what they did and exactly how much money they made. You will be shocked. So some people actually say 9/11 was the largest heist ever, an insurance fraud case. They are right, at least partially, but there's much, much more to it. A mixture of ideology, a grasp for control. When we look at 9/11 and we start talking about it, many of the people who first thought it was maybe wrong were on the fringe politically. For instance, Jeff Baker, who is the chairman of the Constitutional Party. He lives in West Virginia, but he's been studying this issue. He's also a National Guard veteran, by the way. And he sees, well, listen to what Jeff has to say.
I think we need to first take a look at what happened on September 11th. There were actually three buildings that collapsed on September 11th. World Trade Center 7 was two blocks away from the Twin Towers. I think this is important to consider because it was not rained on by any debris. It was just a 40-story building. And at 5 p.m. on 9/11, Jane Stanley, the reporter for the BBC, was standing at ground zero and reported that Building 7 collapsed, when in fact you could still see it over her shoulder. And then 20 minutes later it did collapse. This is foreknowledge, and it needs to be investigated. Additionally, Larry Silverstein, the owner of World Trade Center 7 complex, before 9/11, had taken out a multi-billion dollar insurance policy to protect his property against a terrorist attack. And then in 2002, on a PBS station interview, he said that he gave the order to pull it. Pull it is a controlled demolition term. More evidence of foreknowledge. These are facts. You can watch the interview. You can look. You can get the BBC footage. How did the British know 20 minutes ahead of time that this was going to happen? This needs to be investigated. There is a preponderance of anomalies surrounding the events on 9/11. Architects and engineers, over 1,000 degreed and licensed architects and engineers have looked at the information, and there's so much information that needs to be, that doesn't make sense to the official story.
If you don't want to take Becker's word for it, listen to this. The soundtrack from a TV interview on PBS with Larry Silverstein.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building.
Word about Larry Silverstein. He was born in Brooklyn, New York, and was known for his big real estate deals all over the East Coast. Many of them were speculative, but many of them also were golden. They made Larry Silverstein and his company lots of money. It was only 6 weeks before 9/11 in July 2001 that Silverstein completed the largest real estate transaction in New York State history, a 99-year lease on the 10.6 million square feet of the World Trade Center, both buildings, for $3.25 billion. Was fate unkind to him that something like this would happen only 6 short weeks later after obligating that kind of money? Or is there something suspicious about the timeline? Silverstein was able to collect double indemnity insurance payments on his lease when the buildings were destroyed. Evidently, he had good lawyers. So actually, Silverstein had no loss at all, but already a handsome return on his investment. At the time, a lot of people were wondering why this man, a smart businessman, would ever enter into a deal in the first place, as the environmental agencies had been all over the Twin Towers saying that they were going to have asbestos removal done. And on the world's tallest buildings, this asbestos removal would have cost a fortune. So, in actuality, Silverstein and his company got a profit from the insurance companies, and they saved a lot of money not having to remove the asbestos. Now, Silverstein himself has always been touchy, to say the least, when asked about the Building 7 proposition. Listen to this as an internet reporter who, frankly, has been hounding Silverstein for some time, finally cornered Silverstein at a press conference and made a public announcement that he wanted to know more about Building 7. He wanted Silverstein to answer. Evidently, it hit a raw nerve when the reporter insinuated that the Building 7 collapse could not have been an accident, an act of God. As many people, and I'm sure probably almost everyone in our audience has seen video of Building 7 coming down, even Dan Rather on television announced it looks like a controlled demolition. And it did. If so, how did Silverstein wire it up that day when the building was burning? Obviously, it had to be done before. Is this one of the smoking guns about 9/11? Interestingly enough, the 9/11 Truth Commission, the official one, never even questioned this.
For Larry Silverstein, last time we talked, sir, I asked you if you could address some of the 9/11 conspiracy theories that you are accused of. Sadly, your response has actually invited more of them. I mean, for the record, everybody knows your infamous comments on PBS where you said pull Building 7 on 525 on the day of 9/11.
They were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Your official response was that it was the firefighters. My question is, it was pretty clear that you meant the building, and if it was the firefighters, they already are outside the building by 12 because the water lines were broken.
Ask the question.
And the fire chief that you said you spoke to, Fire Chief Nagro, denies talking to you on that day of 9/11. Can you answer those questions and address the theories against you?
I suggest everybody's consideration.
Just one question.
That we all look at the thousands of pages of testimony that have been rendered in many years since 9/11. And let's use today's session for some of this.
Are you aware of testimony of bombs in the building before the building collapsed, sir? Are you aware of that testimony? Sir, there's testimony by Barry Jennings. Sir, you don't have to touch me. Listen, I'll walk away. All I'm asking is a question. I don't have to be kicked out. It's a legitimate question. You don't have to put your hands on me. But all I'm saying is, no, I'm not. I'm here. The question was not answered. That's why I have a grievance.
Okay.
Larry Silverstein was told not to come into work. That's why him, his daughter, and his son never showed up to work on 9/11. He put an insurance policy on the buildings. Reporters, do your job. Please ask some questions. All right, so I just walked out World Trade Center server after I just asked Larry Silverstein a question, and he told me to look at the testimony of the people who survived 9/11. And I'm here with William Rodriguez. Can you tell us about your testimony?
No, my testimony was omitted from the final report of the 9/11 Commission. The allegations of explosions were not investigated. Of course, this has been taken into different levels of theories, but it's not like I support any of them. I'm just saying that, you know, it was not investigated properly, and we wanted to have a transparency when it came to the report, and we didn't have it. And many of the families and people affected by the event, I'm still searching for answers.
An honor and a pleasure to run into you. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, simply that, you know, it's the 10-year anniversary coming on soon. We want to bring a message of hope and a message of resiliency for the families and the victims of 9/11, and also for the people of the world that were affected directly by the event. Sadly, it has been utilized for political reasons and for conspiracy theories that we don't agree with, including you and I. So we basically want to destroy those before they continue spreading the wrong way.
God bless you. Thank you, brother.
It's one of the things that jumps out at me as we do these conspiracy shows over the weeks and months. You'll see that most of the people involved in conspiracies or possibly involved usually benefit pretty well financially. For instance, Larry Silverstein, he's doing better than ever. He has apartment buildings all over New York now, office buildings, continuing to build. He has a good family relationship with his children. They're all involved in the business. Life could not be better than it is for Larry Silverstein. This is the Conspiracy Hour. We're talking about 9/11. Next, Jim Morris.
A section of the World Trade Center has collapsed onto the street below.
The Pentagon is now being evacuated.
It's a pleasure to welcome Jim Morris to the program. Jim, one of the better investigative journalists. Jim has come on board as a consultant to the series. And Jim, we appreciate you working with us. It's good to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, Jerry, it's always good to be with you.
Well, we tend, Jerry, to look at events as if they're just separate and unconnected. We know about the rise of communism. We know about the rise of Hitler and the Nazis. We know about the Cold War. And we think that all that is just separate issues in history. What I have found in my research and what I'm going to try to show is you've got the same families, the same bloodlines, sometimes even the same personalities. They created communism, funded it. They co-opted the Russian Revolution and created a communist government in Russia. And then when it threatened to get out of their control, they then created Hitler and the Nazis as a bloc against Eastern communism. And then when he got out of control, that we saw the specter of they had to ally the capitalist West with the communist East to try to stop Hitler. Then they moved into the Cold War, East versus West, which was the original game plan. And, of course, in the early 90s, that fell apart. So they had to cast around for another villain, something to keep the profit line going in the military-industrial complex. And, of course, now we're on this nebulous, never-ending war on terrorism.
And, you know, you're laying out something here that seems to be the underlying symptom underneath all of this to me, and that seems to be a simple motive of greed, getting more government money, more corporate money, getting money under false pretenses, so to speak.
Well, actually, it goes deeper than that, Jerry. I mean, yes, money, wealth, that's important. That leads to their real true goal, which is control. They want to control. One of the Rockefellers recently was quoted as saying they want a chipped population that will just be a consumer slaves, basically. And if you look at the debt statistics in this country, you know, we supposedly did away with slavery in 1865, and yet most people today get up, go to a job they don't really like, and just keep working at it because they're so far in debt, there's nothing else they can do. They are what is known as debt slaves.
It's kind of a modern company store type deal.
Right. And, in fact, it's interesting because a lot of people are claiming that what we see in the United States today is fascism. And fascism is defined in the dictionary as the combined power of the corporate corporations in the state. You combine that, and that's the definition, dictionary definition of fascism. But what's interesting is that Mussolini, who is credited with coining the term fascism because that comes from his black-shirted fascistas, he himself said that fascism is really not the proper term. The proper term is corporatism, okay, where you have corporate business running the country. Now, in fascist Italy and Nazi Germany, we saw the state gain control over the corporations. In modern America, what's happened is the corporations have gained control over the state. But hey, the end result's the same. Be careful about 9/11 and let's find out, because what I saw immediately was just like after the Kennedy assassination. Within an hour, when most people didn't even understand what had happened, and a lot of people had not even heard what had happened, they were already saying, we got one guy, he did it. Lee Harvey Oswald in 1963, Osama bin Laden in 2001. And I said, let's find out what's really going on. So I began to start digging in, and what I found was in both the Clinton administrations and the early Bush administration, there were actually steps taken to block investigations into this international terrorist.
How do you explain that? It seems to me that what you're saying, Jim, is that there's a government up front, and then there's really somebody else pulling the strings.
Well, if you'll remember, just a day or two after 9/11, when there was some concern about maybe more terrorist attacks, we were actually told, and it was reported in the mainstream media, that there was a shadow government. Okay, well, now, wait a minute, folks. What's the shadow government? And do we get to vote for them?
I didn't see them on the ballot.
I didn't either. Who has control over the shadow government?
They didn't buy one political ad.
No. No. And what party does the shadow government belong to?
Right.
This is Jerry Pippin. You're listening to the Conspiracy Hour. We're talking with Jim Mars. More coming up. Are you curious about extraterrestrials, UFOs, alien abduction, implants, the secret space program, Area 51, and other UFO topics? Then don't miss UFOCon 2012, September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California. Hear 13 exciting speakers, including Douglas Dietrich, presenting Roswell as you've never heard it before. Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, will review his new discoveries about implants. Laura Eisenhower on her almost mission to Mars. Joining these speakers are Richard Dole, Chris O'Brien, Alfred Weber, Jordan Maxwell, Michael Surratt, plus five others, including special guests Sean David Morton, Russell Targ, and John B. Wells, the Saturday night host of Coast to Coast. For more information, visit the website UFOCon2012.com. That's UFOCon2012.com. On the Scepter Radio Network, we have Jim Mars with us as our guest, and we're talking about conspiracies, and basically we're going to get around to 9/11. But Jim, why don't we tell everybody in the audience exactly what you think a conspiracy is?
Well, there are events that are caused by more than one person, which isn't means it's a conspiracy.
Right. It's not like they don't tell you, and it doesn't show up in the official record. It does if you look hard enough.
That's true. In fact, one of the few but possibly good things that came out of 9/11 was that it rehabilitated the word conspiracy. Up until then, you know, I and many other people have tried to say there was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy, there was a conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy, a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King, a conspiracy at the Murrah Federal Building, a conspiracy in Waco, a conspiracy at Ruby Ridge, and the media acted like, well, that's just silly because conspiracies don't happen in this country. But the Bush administration, even President Bush himself, we all agree that 9/11 was a conspiracy.
Now,
the question becomes, whose conspiracy was it?
That was my question. Is this the same people behind all of those things you ticked off?
Well, when you go back and really start digging into it, you find that, yes, it can be tracked up to certain government leaders, corporate leaders, and, yes, they all tend to tie together. For example, there's a growing amount of evidence that the father of President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, believe it or not, had connections into the Kennedy assassination. The day after the assassination, there's an FBI document talking about the reaction of the anti-Cuban community to anti-Castro Cuban community to the assassination, and it said this has been information provided by Mr. George Bush of the CIA.
Yeah, in fact, I've heard, and maybe you've seen a document that backs up or not, but Papa Bush, as I like to call him, even though there was a predecessor, Prescott, even before him, he made a call to the CIA, I think, from Texas, not in Dallas, but a little town out Greenville or Weatherford or someplace out there.
Right. Which is within 20, 30 minutes driving of Dallas.
Like he was setting up an alibi.
Right. And, in fact, interestingly enough, George Herbert Walker Bush turned in to the Secret Service the name of a man named James Parrott and said he may have been connected to the assassination. It turns out that James Parrott, at that time, was just a young political activist who was working against some of the buddies of Bush. So, in other words, they took the opportunity to try to get in trouble one of their political opponents.
And, well, that's not new with this group.
No, that's the way they play. They play hardball right down the line. And you mentioned Prescott Bush. I hope everybody realizes that in the middle of World War II, in late 1942, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the current president, the father of George Herbert Walker Bush, was actually prosecuted by the federal government of the United States under the Trading with the Enemies Act, and they said he was nothing but a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis.
And I guess they would have gone ahead and prosecuted him, but somebody, I think maybe Roosevelt, said let's not do it during a war or something.
Well, this is interesting. I don't know if you know this, Jerry.
Yeah.
In the summer of 1942, when Prescott undoubtedly knew that they were looking into his business dealings and that it was probably going to come out that he was through his Holdings and Union Banking Corporation had provided funding and support for Hitler and the Nazis. What does he do? In the summer of 1942, he creates and founds the United Service Organization, the USO. And if you've ever been in the military, everybody loves the USO.
Yes, they do.
And in World War II, it was a huge part of the war effort.
It was necessary.
That's right. So can you imagine the propaganda disaster and the confusion that would have been created if they had announced that the creator of the USO was a Nazi supporter? They just couldn't do that. So they kind of swept the whole thing under the rug.
Well, you know, it seems that same modus of operandi has been working all along. Now they're using the Christian element to cover the tracks.
Exactly. And that's one thing that infuriates me about the neocons is the way that they have used and abused the really caring and well-intentioned people of the fundamentalist Christians. They say the right things, but they don't do them.
We're talking with Jim Mars, and Jim, you and I have both been called many names. How would you like to be referred to? I mean, your moniker here in the interview. How should I refer to you?
Journalist, author.
That's good. You had a career in journalism right on. You started, you were a police reporter at one time. We talked in great detail about that one time.
Yeah. I still consider myself a journalist. In fact, I've been a member of the Journalism Society since 1966 when I was still in college, and I had dedicated myself to journalism. And I'd simply want to point out to you, Jerry, that I never left journalism. Journalism left me.
It's amazing the way they do handle things now, and I don't think it's all our age.
No.
That causes us to say, look at those people. What do they do? They handout journalism is alive and well. The public relations person is sometimes the main source.
And we were taught early on that you define news as a news story, as a story that would affect the most people. Okay.
Going back over the 11 years here, since 9/11 coming up, Jim, I just don't see that the major media ask a lot of questions right off the bat. They didn't really do much digging.
Basic questions. I'll give you two. Mayor Giuliani of New York, on that day, he does not go to his brand new multi-million-dollar hardened command center in Building 7. He goes to a temporary command center, and then later that afternoon, giving news conferences, he states that while he's in the temporary center, somebody ran in and said, "You've got to evacuate. The towers are about to collapse," and that they were actually in the process of getting out and leaving when the buildings came down. Very simple question. Mr. Mayor, who was it that told you those buildings were coming down? How did they know? And why didn't they tell the firemen in those buildings that they were about to collapse? So there's one question. Another question to me that I'd like to ask somebody is, who was it that authorized the Bin Laden family members to fly across the United States during the no-fly zone when you and I couldn't fly and gather in Boston and then left the country without being seriously interrogated? Who authorized that?
And, to my knowledge, no one's answered that question, but probably because I haven't heard anybody really ask.
That's true. That's because there's no news media.
let's get to that point, Jim, because I really think that if you get and really examine the facts here, the news media, by not asking these questions, not doing their job, by covering up, they're much more guilty than just playing along with the corporate interests.
They are complicit.
Yes, they are.
They're part of it. Now, that's just tragic, you know. And especially to me, someone who's dedicated my life to journalism and bringing the news and trying to find truth as best you can and bring it to the public.
And you know, I consider them just as guilty as the people who did whatever they did at 9/11.
Well, I know I'm a Texan. I've lived in Texas all my life, and in Texas we've actually executed people that did not pull the trigger, but they were there or they helped cover up the crime. Under the law, they're called accomplices after the fact. And the news media in this country have put themselves in the position of being accomplices after the fact.
How do you explain? There must be some good reporters out there.
There are.
I mean,
there's, yeah. I can tell it to you very simply. There is no control over every editor and every reporter out there in this country. Obviously, that would be impossible. In fact, I know some very good editors, some very good reporters. The problem is there is very tight control over the distribution of the information. Today, there is literally a handful of multinational corporations, Disney, Viacom, etc., that control everything we see and hear. And I'm not just talking news. I'm talking billboards,
sure,
Radio, CD, satellite, cable, movies, magazines, you name it. And if the top corporate leadership says, we're not going to run this, or we are going to run this, then, you know, we don't get to see it. And unfortunately, it's a case of if you didn't hear about it, then it didn't happen.
I still have the problem by the reporters, or not necessarily in the reporters, let's say the news manager, the editor. They obviously know what's a good story, and I guess it all boils down to the fact, I remember especially when 9/11 first happened, everybody was very sensitive. And if you make a little comment or something or start investigating, well, now, could this really be true? I got called in on the carpet, not in a harsh way, don't do that.
Right.
It was more like, you're offending a lot of people here.
Right.
And
let's don't upset the
advertisers. Right, exactly.
That's the main thing.
That's
we don't
exactly.
Want to, and
those
again,
people...
We're,
Those people were sincere. They were saying that. It's the guys up above, I guess.
That's right. And we're back to corporatism.
Yes.
Okay? The corporations are the advertisers, the sponsors.
That's right.
We don't want to get them upset, so we're not going to talk about it.
Oh, lots of people don't advertise with me because we do shows like this.
That's right. All right, let's take NBC. NBC Nightly News, you know. Supposed to be a premier mainstream hardcore news organization, and yet who owns NBC? General Electric.
That's true.
And General Electric is one of the biggest defense contractors in the country. Do you think they're really going to put a story on that would, like, call into question what's happening in Iraq? They're not going to do it.
You got a good point. Now, let's talk about 9/11. Down to the basics. Why would somebody do that?
I think what we see on 9/11 is the same thing we saw on the Kennedy assassination, which is a confluence of agendas.
Various interests, they get together and they're all working in a common goal, and they may or may not have even talked about it.
Well, let's say you and I and owners of big business and you have some buildings that are white elephants. It's not cost effective to tear them down and got asbestos in them. Then we'll give you a permit to tear them down. You can't fill them up. Well, you're kind of stuck to the tune of millions of dollars. Me, I want a war over in another country, okay? Paul, he wants to beef up the defense budget, but it's kind of tough going because with the collapse of communism...
Yeah, there's no Cold War, and we're spending more money than ever.
Yeah, there's no enemy. So, you know, so all of a sudden, you know, we're sitting around having drinks, and we're going, you know, you're moaning about your problems, I'm moaning about ours, and it just kind of gets to be a consensus that, well, you know, if we use the ability to electronically capture airplanes and fly them by remote control against the wishes of anybody on board, and if we crash those planes into your buildings and you got double indemnity and, you know, more money out of them than they're worth, and we could use that as an excuse or provocation to start a war, hey, this would take care of everything.
Over the next few months, we are going to bring to the public the ugly face of what really happened on 9/11 and who is behind it.
Some senators have described this as a second Pearl Harbor.
There have been many excellent documentaries on 9/11. Many of these documentaries have uncovered much of the hidden secrets behind the story.
That had been planned for at least a year.
On our series, we're going to attempt to put a face on all of this. The people. Why they did it. Who did it?
We are not exactly sure at the moment of the whereabouts of the Secretary of Defense.
We will attempt to bring you the facts, plain and simple. Our 9/11 series will name the names. We'll tell you who did it. And we'll present the evidence to back up that story. Jim, we'll get back to 9/11 in a minute, but let's talk about the wider scope of this whole conspiracy thing, the New World Order, the powers that be that try to control the world. And you like to talk about the Bilderbergers.
About the Bilderbergers. Well, never forget that the Bilderbergers were originally formed by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who had been a Nazi SS officer. and he headed it for many years until he got caught in a bribery scandal with Lockheed. And so, again, we're back up to these multinational corporations and their desire to control so that they can make... It's a endless cycle. With control, you make more money. With more money, you get more control.
It has to be control, really, more than just money itself, simply because, let's take Vice President Cheney. The man has more money due to his stock deals than anybody would ever need. So why would he want to make more money? But he seems to be very concerned about that.
Well, and that's because he's looking beyond his own personal wealth. You know, he ain't got a lot of time left, but he's got family and he's got relatives and he's got friends and neighbors and he's got people who are stockholders in Halliburton and KBR and all these other no-bid contractors that are all profiting, and so he's looking out for their interest.
You're listening to the Conspiracy Hour. We're talking with Jim Mars, a noted journalist and author.
And we're talking about 9/11 and other conspiracies as well as we approach the 11th anniversary of 9/11. We'll be back in a moment, so don't go away.
You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love. A gift of life to that stray dog or cat.
The sound of the airplane hitting one of the Twin Towers almost 11 years ago. And it's almost like yesterday. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me this, and they say one of two things. They say, I just can't believe the American government would do that to its own people. Or has that ever happened before?
And the answer, unfortunately, is very definitely yes. What is now becoming very clear to historians and researchers who have really been paying attention and gathering all the information is that Pearl Harbor was not the sneak attack that we were told it was, that Roosevelt, his chief of staff, George Marshall, handful of others in Washington knew that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked. They knew when, and they allowed it to happen because you have to understand, Roosevelt got elected to an unprecedented fourth term in office. They changed the law right after that on the pledge that he would keep us out of war. And yet, by mid-1941, I think it was obvious that we probably were going to end up getting in the war. I think he knew that. I think he so he had a dilemma. If he had simply said, we have to go to war, there would have been a considerable division in this country. The polls were showing 80-90% of the public said, we don't want to be involved in this. And so they needed an event, a provocation, to get a united and angered American public into the war. So when they learned that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked, Japanese decoding machines were sent to every base in the Pacific except Pearl Harbor. The aircraft carriers that they needed to fight a Pacific war were suddenly out of Pearl Harbor. And on Sunday, of course, December the 7th, Pearl Harbor was attacked. 3,000 Americans were killed. The next day, we declared war, and we went into World War II. So, yes, it can happen. In fact, here's a little piece of irony. With the next day, Congress created a committee to investigate and find out what had happened at Pearl Harbor. And they decided on these scapegoats, Admiral Kimmel and General Short, and said they were just derelict in duty. They were just, a failure of intelligence. And the same things we hear following 9/11. You know, it was just a screw-up. And Admiral Kimmel and General Short fought for years against this verdict. And then after they passed away, their families continued the fight. In the summer of 2001, it was getting very close to the point to where the Bush White House was going to issue a public apology and announce that, yes, that's true, that they really had not been derelict in their duty and that there were other things involved in Pearl Harbor. But then 9/11 came and the decision was made that they would not do this and not make this public because, in the words of one Washington reporter, it might draw attention and might cause people to compare the complicity of the government in Pearl Harbor with 9/11. Isn't that ironic? And then we also know that now about Operation Northwoods.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay, in 1961, of course, there was the failed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, which originally we told the world we had nothing to do with. Adlai Stevenson got up in the United States.
At the UN.
And he said, no, this is not us. We're not doing this. But that story quickly broke down. And, of course, it turned out that we really were. We had armed, trained, backed, supported the Cuban brigade. And, of course, it met disaster at the Bay of Pigs. They were taken into captivity. And this is an interesting point here. President Kennedy, and I can clearly remember this, went on national television, and he said, this happened on my watch, and I will take full responsibility. And basically offered an apology. I'm sorry this happened, and I'll take the responsibility. He did not have to do that, because what is clear from the record is that he was not even aware of the Bay of Pigs invasion until after his election. And he was finally briefed in early December of 1960 and told, by the way, we've got this invasion plan going on for Cuba. And who was responsible then? The White House political action officer of Eisenhower, Richard M. Nixon.
Yeah. Oh, no, Nixon himself.
Yeah, Nixon had authorized the Bay of Pigs invasion. So,
I didn't know that.
Oh, he took full credit for it in his book, My Three Crises. And so Kennedy legitimately could have said, hey, I'm sorry, but this wasn't my deal. You know, Nixon did this, but he didn't. He sucked it up. He was a man. He said, this happened on my watch. I'll take responsibility. Have we heard anything even remotely like that from President Bush about 9/11?
No. Not at all.
No apologies. No I'm sorrys. No nothing. Okay? So in the wake of that, Kennedy, needless to say, was upset about the failure of the Bay of Pigs. So he took the secret war against Castro and took it away from the CIA and turned it over to the Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon planners went to work, and they came up with Operation Northwoods. And essentially, this was a plan to target Americans for assassination, hijack airplanes, sink ships on the high sea, set off bombs in American cities, particularly Miami and Atlanta and New Orleans, and blame it all on Castro. Okay, this is what is known as a false flag operation. Okay, now you see one flag waving and you say they did it, but they didn't really do it.
Right.
So now what's really amazing about this, and here is another great piece of irony, is that, and never forget this, the Joint Chiefs of Staff approved Operation Northwoods. They thought that was a good plan. Okay, because this way we'll enrage the American people. They will demand that we invade Cuba. We'll have full support, and we'll get to carry out our military mission. Kennedy was the one who said, wait a minute, we don't play that way. And if we play that way, then we're no better than the people we call our enemies. And he ordered all copies of Northwoods destroyed. But typical government bureaucracy, at least one set, did not get destroyed. It lay around in the government file for years and years and years until the mid-90s when the Assassination Records Review Board, which was created by Congress in the wake of the Oliver Stone movie JFK and tasked to look into government files for anything that might have to do with Kennedy or those years or the assassination. And what do? They find Operation Northwoods. They placed it in the National Archives. And so now it became public. We know what their plans were. And I just find it great irony that it was Kennedy's assassination and the subsequent investigation of the Assassination Records Review Board that revealed to us how our own military would attack their own citizens in a false flag operation to further their own agendas.
You know, it seems that they've been using the same playbook all along, just changing the names of the players.
Right.
And when we've only got about 5 minutes left here on this show, and we've been talking about a lot of general things. You think the same people behind the Kennedy assassination were behind 9/11? I mean, not specifically, but more or less the same groups?
The same groups, the same power bases, yes. And let me wrap up with this. We've all heard Condoleezza Rice and even President Bush basically say, well, how could we have ever thought that they would have hijacked airplanes and flown them into buildings, right? We've all heard that.
Right.
But let me point out that in March of 2001, 6 months before 9/11, on a TV program written by Chris Carter, there was a program aired that had a scenario of rogue government agents within the government piggybacking on war game exercises, using drone airplanes, were going to crash them into the World Trade Center towers to generate a war on terrorism so that they could generate more profits for the military-industrial complex. And he wrote this 6 months. So if a TV writer can envision this 6 months before 9/11, how can Rice and Bush say, who would have ever thought that? Surely they've got more intelligence and more consultation than a TV writer.
You know, one of the things, and this happens when especially you write books now, but when you're a reporter, you write a story, Jim, sometimes you get reactions from people and leads that you never thought you'd get.
Absolutely, yeah. When you put the story out there and somebody realizes that you know the story, or at least you're getting close to it,
yeah,
then they come out of the woodwork.
Yeah,
they say, well, let me tell you,
yeah,
just this past weekend I had a retired air traffic controller who was working in 2001, and he gave me some really astounding information about how they were able to subvert our normal hijack emergency procedures.
Well, we'll have to stay tuned for that. We'll get into more of that. You know, this whole thing, it's just unraveling, isn't it? Doesn't it appear to you?
I think so. In fact, what I find most astounding and most hopeful is that 6 years after the Kennedy assassination, and I was there, and I was trying to tell people there's something stinks about this, and I was the nut and the conspiracy theorist. And in fact, if you'll remember, Jerry, it was not even considered polite to talk about that in public, you know. And national polls are showing that 50-60% of the population is not buying the official conspiracy theory of the 19 suicidal hijackers.
Just think how smart the American public would be if the media were doing their job.
If the media would do their job, I think all this could be cleared up, because I have unlimited faith and confidence in the goodwill, the good intentions, and the honesty of the average American. The problem is if you're being fed incomplete or erroneous information, I don't care how smart you are, you can't make a correct decision about anything.
Jim Mars, it's a pleasure having you on, and I look forward to working with you very closely on this, and we will be revealing more as we go along about all of these people, just like the man that came forward on how they would... Before we go on that air traffic control question, there was obviously something going on, and that was an exercise, right? So there were false blips. So people, how could they not know those hijacked planes? Well, they didn't know what planes were what.
Well, they had also made a seemingly small change to the procedures prior to the Bush administration. If an air traffic controller wanted to declare a hijack emergency, he could on his own authority, and then immediately contact NORAD and local commanders if they felt this was serious, could launch their own planes. You might recall in 1999 when the golfer Payne Stewart's plane went off course.
They tracked that.
Yeah, 14 minutes, there's jets all around his plane, okay? But under the Bush administration, they began to change the procedures. The air traffic controllers could not take on the authority to declare emergency. They had to contact supervisors. Supervisor had to contact somebody else. And then they couldn't contact NORAD and get a response out of them without going through the Secretary of Defense's office. In other words, you got to get over Roseville before you can send off jet fighters. And, of course, on the morning of 9/11, there's been two or three conflicting stories on exactly where Roseville was and exactly when. And so this is what this air traffic controller called the slow track. Okay, so on the morning of 9/11, they had to go through the slow track. And what was really interesting is the next day they scrapped the slow track slow track, well, and they went back to the way they'd been doing things.
It served its usefulness.
That's right. So, in other words, they instituted this, pulled off the attack, and then went back to normal reaction procedures.
You've just had a preview of what we'll be doing with lots of other people talking and lots of actualities and lots of in-depth stories coming up. Jim Mars, it's always a pleasure. We'll be talking to you again soon. Thanks for coming by.
Well, and you know, I'm always telling people that your mind is like a parachute. It works better when it's open.
It's hard to believe that in less than a week, we will have had this happen 11 years, and still, there's no final outcome. As Jim Morris mentioned, over 60% of the people in the U.S., according to polls, do not accept Uncle Sam and the official story. We'll be back next week with more on 9/11. We have some unusual recordings we're going to present next week. You may not have heard them. And some new witnesses, we hope. If you're a witness and you'd like to come forward, contact me at jerry@jerrypippin.com. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Tales of High Strangeness. Jerry Pippin's Parazone. Check out our stories of the horrific, the interesting, the spiritual on the paranormal pages of jerrypippin.com.